Rabbi speaking.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. This is the final presentation for the season. I'm actually recording this a bit. And we're going to... Mietzesha next year. This is the 2010 season was really spectacular in terms of the weather. You really did not have that much rain, if you think about it. And I'm pleased that people responded so well to the lectures. The previous group was very kind, and you've been very kind as well. And it's very special. You know, I always sort of look forward to this because it's, you're a special group of people. You don't meet people like you every day. And in so many ways, your life histories and, things that you've been through and your views of the world, it's very, I find it very refreshing to hear it, you know, to hear about things from Europe, your memories. It's amazing. The rabbi on Shabbat mentioned that, he said people need number of things. I'm not going to go over his speech, but he did say that we need aesthetics. And there I am, I'm going to talk about aesthetics. It was kind of, I didn't plan it with him. And I thought for the last lecture that I'm giving this season, just do something very, how should we say, not superficial, but something different. And we'll talk a bit about beauty and aesthetics. The question of beauty, what really is it, how is it defined in Jewish terms? What do we mean by something that's beautiful? Maybe a person, maybe an object. You know, we all like to go to museums, or maybe some of us do. I just noticed on the internet, there is the only piece of news which has got everybody absolutely united at the moment, and nothing to do with the president. It's connected to a president, but it's to do with the dress. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, everyone is talking about the dress that a certain young lady wore at her wedding this past weekend. And believe it or not, this was the topic of conversation at lunchtime. It's the topic of conversation certainly around the world. Apparently she had two dresses, so I'm told. One for the ceremony and then one afterwards for the celebration. I'm not going to comment on the fact that they managed to find a reform rabbi to perform a mixed marriage. Apparently I don't even think he's even classified. The chosid is not even classified as being Jewish, so there's nothing to say about that. But, you know, when you advertise for a rabbi, you know, you usually get somebody to volunteer, particularly that sort of high profile, and that's what happened. But that's besides the point. But the question of looks, you know, there's a lot of people in this world who make a lot of money on trying to promise you to preserve your looks, to preserve your beauty. Obviously, this is particularly focused towards the female population. But at the same time, there are gentlemen also who are worried about their hair receding, and there's all these adverts the whole time. You know, we can bring back your hair. Don't ask me how they ever do it, but this is what they claim. And, you know, we're living in a world which is very concerned about the way you or we look. Fine. Okay, that's the world around us. So the question I'm asking, of course, is, as Jews, do we have any real recognition of this? Do we say that beauty, aesthetics, is something to be praised? Is it something very superficial? We don't really have any views on this. What do we say? Is it desirable? Is it not desirable? Are we going to say the obvious, which is, well, we're really more into the spiritual, what goes on inside? Or are we going to recognize that visual beauty has a place? So what I'm going to do initially is share with you again a number of sources, which really are quite remarkable. Surprising in the extreme, and things which, in the world that we live in today, with the separation of men and women, certainly in the religious community, it just is always amazing to realize that there were once upon a time great rabbis who appreciated beauty, whether it be in an object or in a person, and be that whether that person was male or female. That's very interesting. Some people do this when they go to the Metropolitan Museum. You know, you just cannot believe the beauty that is there in terms of the artwork, or in terms of the sculpture, whatever. I had a wonderful experience in London about a month ago. I went on a Tanakh tour of the British Museum. Somebody is arranging tours of the museum and linking what you see with stories in the Bible. And not only does he link it, it's a Lubavitcher Chassid, does it? He's not Lubavitcher anyway, Tommy, but he's still a Hasidic guy. Not only does he link it to stories, but he also takes you into the vault. And you see things which really were just beyond belief in beauty. So what did he show us? He showed us something which I'll never forget. It's a long rod which was dated from the Egyptian period. He claims it's around the time that the Jews were in Egypt. And what does it have on the head? It has a snake's head. Very interesting. So you think about the story of Moshe, and he threw down the rod, it turned into a snake. And there you are. We're having a lecture from a world-renowned Egyptologist, I think that's what they call them. And he's showing us this, and my mouth dropped. And then he showed us other things, and then it's just remarkable. And these things are really very precious. They're very beautiful. Not only do they give us a sense of connection to our tradition, but at the same time, they are very interesting things to see. You know, if you ever find yourself in London, this is a tour which is absolutely, it's a must. He runs it about two or three times a month. You know, I'd only be too glad to put you in touch with this gentleman, and it's at very minimal cost. It's like $20 for the whole tour. It really was nothing. Anyway, put that to one side. That's the advert. I finished the advert. So again, beauty is really very significant. So where do we find this in Talmud? Where do we find that the Talmud sort of goes out of its way to talk about beauty? So you open up the Talmud, Megillah, page 15. All right, and that, quote number one. Listen to this. Tana Rabbanan. This is the rabbis. The rabbis were saying this. Arba noshim yufeifiyot ayu ba'olam. There were four, I'm going to use the word, extraordinarily beautiful women in history. Okay, this is not referring to Cleopatra, and it's not referring to what the world would say, you know, whatever names will come up. The Jewish tradition is different, but it's also people you will have heard of. Number one was Sarah. Okay, now again, Sarah at the age of 90, you know, started bearing children. As my wife put it once to me, she said that if it had been her, she would have not exactly been too excited about having to go through all that again at the age of 19. I guess most of the women here would agree. But that's the story of Sarah, a Bobby who became an Ema, right? And she apparently not only became a mother, but her beauty returned. She was an exceedingly beautiful woman. We know that this was a problem with Pharaoh when they went down to Egypt. Pharaoh was going to see her. Again, her skin was probably lighter color than the Egyptians anyway, who were very dark skinned, as they still are to this very day. So she stood out, and you know, it's a whole story. So she's number one on the list. Number two, who's number two? Rachav. Now Rachav is somebody you may not have heard of. Rachav was the lady who gave the spies, when they went to Jericho to check out whether Jericho, whether they could conquer it, she gave them shelter. All right? Now, she wasn't Jewish at the time. Later on, the tradition is she converted, and she became the wife of Yoshua, the right, you know, sort of the representative of the Jewish people, essentially. And you know what? She was a very beautiful woman. And it's so interesting that all the traditions about this woman, you know, the fact that, I mean, a lot of what she says, when you look at the language of this woman, she has a tremendous depth to her. And the tradition was that she spent her whole life as a zonah. Zonah literally means a prostitute. That's the way she earned her money. So you think to yourself, a woman like that, and she became literally the wife of the leader of the Jewish people. Wow, I mean, this was a turnabout like you've never read before. And she is one of the greatest Baalot Tshuva, that probably in the history of, in our history for sure. And she was also one of the most beautiful women who ever lived. Racha, okay, in case you're wondering. Number three, Abigail. Abigail was this wonderful lady who basically managed to stop David killing her husband. She was married to a guy who was really a very awful gentleman. That's a very British way of putting it. He was a lowlife. A guy called Naval. And Naval literally means lowlife. That was his nickname. We don't know what his real name was. But everybody used to call him Mr. Lowlife. He was a really not nice person. And David was being chased around, as we know. And Saul wanted to kill him, without getting to the whole story. And David needs help. So he goes to Naval. Naval is the same tribe, the tribe of Yehuda. And David says, help us. He's got men with him. They need to be fed. Naval is a rich man. And he says to David in no uncertain terms, what does he say to him? I've forgotten the language that he uses, but basically, I don't know David, I don't know Ben Yishai. He basically sends him away and gives him nothing. Now, David is very angry, as you can imagine, because this is a landsman. You know, you've got to help each other. And he's connected, probably, he's related to him. And you know what? David gets so angry that he decides he's going to kill Naval. David is now the king of Israel, potentially the king, not yet. Saul is still alive, Shaul is still alive, but David treats himself, considers himself as being the king, what we call the king elect. And you know what? David says, this man deserves to die because he rebelled against me, he rebelled against the king. So he's on the way to kill him. Abigail hears about it and she is unbelievable. She gets on a donkey with her provisions and she clears out the storehouse, and she takes the bread, and she takes the cheese, and she takes a whole bunch of stuff. And she meets David, as they say in the classic cowboy movie, she cuts him off at the pass. She meets him just before he gets to Nabal, and you know what she says to him? She says that if you do this, this will be a terrible crime, as you would say in Yiddish, it will be a shanda if you do what you're planning to do. Nabal, I know, she says, I know he's a bad guy because I married him. I always had the question why she married him, but I'm not sure. The shadchan wasn't so great on that one. But you know what happened? Nabal, unfortunately, he is the way he is. She said to David, she begged him, don't kill my husband. And David was so impressed with the way she presented her argument, and there's a whole section in Talmud about it. You know what? She was given the benefit of the, let's call it the benefit of the doubt, and he didn't kill him. In the end, Hashem provided a solution. Nabal essentially had a heart attack and he died. And that was the end of him. And you know what? Abigail was now a widow, and David realized that this is a woman that is so special that she has to become a wife of the king, and he married her. All right, after the requisite time and whatever, prim and proper, and Abigail was wife number, I think number two or number three for David. And the reality is that, again, she's on the list of very, very beautiful women. The final one, I guess everybody will know, is obviously Esther Malka, Queen Esther. Who, again, traditionally is very interesting, because there's a commentary, Vatit Chalchala Malka Esther Ma'od, that it says when Esther heard the news, that she was very perturbed, she was very upset, and the rabbis say that her face turned green. So it says when she went to the king to ask him for permission, you know, to beg on behalf of bring him to the meals and whatever that she was going to do, it says that her face was green. All right, does it mean literally the color green? I'm not sure, like the ice cream we had a few days ago. I don't think so. I think what it means is that, you know, that she was so upset and so, distraught at what's going on, that she was very pale and really was not a shining beauty. But nevertheless, the king gave her the, you know, he brought her in and he basically, we know the story. So there's four women in history, in Jewish history, who we know are classified as very beautiful women. If the Talmud would not have said that, if they didn't feel that that was something to be commented on. Yeah?
I just have to ask, how did these facts become known?
How they become known must have been a rabbinic tradition. Now, this worries me, because I always thought the rabbis would talk about holy things, and here they're talking about beautiful women. So you say to me, you know, this is the whole complaint about the rest of the world. They were sitting at the Achashverosh was talking about the women. We know it says so. It says so in the Megillah, but almost in the Megillah. But this obviously was not something they would discuss, let's say, regularly. But they had this tradition. They didn't reject it. It wasn't, you know, for like nowadays that you've got to have separate entrances for everything. As I said last week, the boys sit on one table, the girls sit on the other table of the wedding, and it's like 2 miles apart. The rabbis were not like that in those days. We know from the Tu B'Av, what we commemorated last week. The girls used to ask the boys, "Nu, pick somebody." They used to dance, right? They had this whole tradition. It's a different world. Now you'll say to me, all right, look, the world today is different, and I accept that, but there is a kind of openness about this, which is very refreshing when you read it in Talmud. It's kind of depressing when you look in the real world how it doesn't play itself out, especially in the religious world, right? I hear of a shul in London, which then now the rabbi is trying to bring the shul into separate kiddushin, that the men and women should be separate of the kiddush. And I think to myself, you know, something wrong with this. It's not the crowd that you normally would behave like that. Why does he want to do that? If he wanted to impress somebody and to do it for that reason, it's not acceptable. If you want to do it, you know, I accept in Hasidic circles that's what they will have, and I respect that. Yes. But in the regular Olam, when you go to a Kiddush, it's a time to meet people. And you know something, sometimes you have something to say to somebody else's spouse. You know, you want to sort of have a conversation because maybe you've got something to ask, something to share, whatever it is. You know, it's not forbidden. So what I would say is that that in Talmud it's very refreshing to read this. And it's even going to be more shocking. I'll shock you in a second. Because quote number two, it talks about beauty, which just mentioned beauty in terms of women in history. We're going to talk about beauty in terms of cities. What is the most beautiful city in the world? No prizes. Jerusalem. And the Talmud puts it, there were 10 portions of beauty that came into the world. 9 of them were given to Jerusalem. And I have to say to this very day, the mayor of Jerusalem, Teddy Kollek, who was not a religious man by any stretch of the imagination, he to me, has a place in Olam Haba. I have no question in my mind. He's got a seat in the world to come. Where he's sitting, I'm not quite sure. But he has a seat over there. You know why? He really developed Jerusalem in such a way. He was the one who insisted that all the verges be planted with flowers in different seasons, and the trees and the greenery. And it's a hot country. To keep those plants alive takes a lot of work. He was very insistent that Jerusalem, somebody must have told him that about Jerusalem being the most beautiful city in the world, and he went out of his way to make it even more beautiful. And that is a zechud. There's no question in my mind about it. And this is what the Talmud says. Ten parts of beauty came to the world. Nine of them were given to Jerusalem. Very interesting. So we recognize beauty in a place. Some people tell me that London is a beautiful place. Fine. Not so convinced about that because, I grew up there and I went to school there. But every time I go to Paris or if I go to a place which is more exotic, you can see beautiful places around the world. Obviously, Jerusalem is in a category by itself as far as I'm concerned, and I really do feel this. When you go there, it is so special. But there's no question that, there are very many beautiful places. The wonders of the world. Go and see the Taj Mahal. Apparently that is one of the spectacular things to see in the world. Okay, this amazing place in India, whatever. The Green Belt, we read a few weeks ago, Rashi points out that there is a suggestion there's a law in the Torah, which says you've got to leave a space around the city, green. All right, now, in the world we live in, all of us know about this. I just heard today about problems of a shul in trying to rebuild in five towns in Woodmere, and they're not being allowed to build because the city is insisting that they will make the green belt, all the green area will get affected by this. It will spoil the view. It will spoil the environment. That's the word that they use today. And this is something which we know about. It's in the Torah. The Torah talks about the environment. Keep the environment. Lenoi la'ir, Rashi says. We need to have a city to have beauty. It has to have green around it. All right, that's why coming here is just so refreshing. Particularly, for us who live in the urban metropolis. Which is not the greatest place to live for all sorts of reasons. And we come out here and the air and the surroundings, it just opens your mind. I've got all my droshes. I mean, I'm playing rabbi again. I shouldn't use the word, but I'm going to be rabbi of Rosh Hashanah in one of the shuls in my neighborhood. So where do I do my drosh? What do I think about it? I come here, sit by the lake, and all of a sudden, you're able to think. Go on the subway. I'll be on the subway probably tomorrow morning, and my mind shuts up again because I just want to get off that train as soon as possible. And in one piece, you know how you feel when you get on the subway. And it's a different world. You come here, this is literally marchivat adat, the Gemara says. It opens your mind. It's wonderful. The interesting Gemara, which really floored me when I came across this, is a statement in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. I'm giving you Talmudic references, all about beauty, all positive. Master Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, the great Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, one of the great, great rabbis, really the chief rabbi. He was Ayal Gabi Mala Baharabai. He was going up some sort of incline towards the temple. He was still alive when the temple was standing, and he was walking towards it. Remember, the Romans were occupying Israel. And he saw a non-Jewish woman, presumably a Roman lady, who was very, very beautiful. And he said, Ama, Marabu Masech Hashem. He said, how great are your work, Hashem, that such a beautiful woman is your handiwork. Unbelievable. All right, imagine Rabbi doing that today. He'd be thrown out of the job. And Rav Odoyu Tekomoda. Rav said, he agreed. Another rabbi agreed. Amar Maha Roya Briot Tavo. Because if you see such a wonderful creation, that's the way he puts it, he says there's a bracha. Baruch Shekacha Bara Bolamo. God created thus in his world. Such a beauty has to be reflected, has to be mentioned. And I don't know what to say. It's just so... And it's not naive. I don't think we're talking about sort of a naivete in the extreme. I think we're talking about the fact that everybody who is sort of being quoted so far, Talmud or Midrash or whatever, Rashi, they all understand that beauty is something which is given to us to enjoy. And this is what the Rabbi said on Shabbat. He's right. There is this necessity for human beings to appreciate aesthetics, to appreciate beauty. So all of that is fine. And everything sounds great until we get to Friday night. And you come to Friday night, and we stand on the porch over here or at home, and you start singing the Eshet Chaim. And all of a sudden you get to a verse at the end of Eshet Chaim, Sheker Achein, Vehem ela yofi. So what are we saying? Shechein, grace, and yofi, beauty. Sheke vehevel is false, and it's a luftmeister. Hevel means it's full of hot air. It's got absolutely no. So what are we talking about? I've just spent the last 20 minutes trying to convince you that was so wonderfully positive towards female beauty and towards beauty of places and beauty of situation or whatever, and all of a sudden. It really is, seems to be a contradiction. Yeah. Yeah, we'll come to that. You've read my script. I think you've actually, no, you haven't. Okay, we're going to talk about that because you're absolutely right. In a second, I'll come to this because I think this is really what we're going to say in a bit more detail. Basically, it's kind of interesting, The Talmud comments on this now, and this again is probably the most famous rabbi in the Talmud, Rabbi Akiva. And what you're going to say, what you've just said about fleeting, is really what he says. He says like this: Av Rabbi Akiva, he says, Rabbi Akiva ra'eshet Turnus Rufus. He had a dialogue with a very wicked Roman whose name was Turnus Rufus. I'm not sure what his famous name was. This is what he's called in the Talmud. And he was called a Rasha. So if he was called a Rasha by the rabbis, he was probably pretty bad. He was a bad guy. And Rabbi Akiva used to dialogue with him, used to have conversations, which were recorded. And one day, Rabbi Akiva saw his wife, who must have been, as they say, whatever the word is in Yiddish, you know, really made up. And as the Romans were, and you can see pictures of this, go to any museum, and you know, you have some idea how they used to dress themselves. And what did Rabbi Akiva do? Three things, interesting. Ruck, firstly, he spat on the ground. I don't know. I suppose that was the way to do it. It's a funny story. Sachak, then he started laughing, and Bachan, he started crying. So everybody thought the rabbi had, you know, for want of a better description, gone a bit gaga. So they said no. Barak, why did he spit on the ground? Shaita ba'a mitipas ruchan. Because at the end of the day, she came from the same source that everybody else came from. Right? You know, the reality is we're all born of the same process, the egg and the sperm and whatever. And you know what? He was prepared to realize, he realized that. And he said, she may look incredibly beautiful now, but we all come from the same place. That was his kind of philosophical initial statement. But then, Sachak, he laughed. Da'atida de Megara. He knew she was going to become Jewish. That's very interesting. How he knew, I don't know. We're not told. But he had this inkling that one day, because seemingly she probably asked the right questions, and she, you know, when he had these conversations, maybe she mixed in with it. I don't know. And he knew that she would become Jewish. V'nasivla. And according to this statement in the Talmud, he was going to marry her. Did that really happen? We know that Rabbi Akiva was married to Rachel. I'm not sure. This is a strange statement of the Talmud, and it needs further investigation. But at least that explains why he laughed. I'm not going to go into that now, but why did he cry? This is interesting. Bachan, this is the point that was made before. Bachan, why did he cry when he saw this woman? Tahai Shufra Bali Afri. You know, this beauty is one day is going to turn into dust. It's fleeting. Exactly what you said. And you know what? Rabbi Akiva cried. He said that Hevel Ayofi means not that it is Hevel, meaning in the sense it's worthless. No. Hevel means it is not everlasting. You're absolutely on the mark. And this is really, again, a statement that we find in the Talmud, in the Mishnah, very famous Mishnah. Mishnah says like this. You're in Block and Hexter, right? And you're having a discussion, a Torah discussion. So in the middle of the Torah discussion, you see the lake for the first time. And you stop the discussion and say, whoa, that is an unbelievable lake. Now, are you doing the right thing or not? The Talmud puts it differently. It says you see a beautiful tree. Or it says you see a beautiful plant. Or whatever it may be. Are you allowed to interrupt your discussion? And the Talmud says, no. Mishnah in Perek, it's very famous, Pirkei Avot. Reb Shimon Omer, Shimon. Hamahalech b'derech, you're walking on the way. V'shoina, you're learning. Umafsik, and you stop, Mishnah, so you stop learning. V'omer, ma noel and zeh, how beautiful is this tree, how beautiful is this lake. Wow. Uma noel nizeh, whatever it is. Ma'ala kotav, that it says that it's considered, kilim itchayev benasha, as if you are giving, or forfeiting your life. In other words, it's such a negative thing to do, and the reason is very simple. What we have here, as beautiful as it is, we have to accept is transient, is not forever. Torah study becomes forever. Sorry?
Beauty is always can be.
and it's only skin deep. We're going to say a bit more about that. Just give me a little bit more to say, because it's very, very interesting. And I've got I read this insight, which really made a lot of sense to me. Another statement of Pirkei Avot, you know, we know this stuff. It says, do not look at the bottle. Do not look at the kankan, but look what's inside. All right? Yesh kankan chadash male yashan. There's a new bottle which is full of old wine. That's good. But there could be a yashan, an old bottle, shafil chadashim, but which doesn't even have any new wine. The rabbis weren't talking about, you know, going to the liquor store. They were talking about the idea that a person has, some people have debt, some people don't have debt, some people have a deeper character, a more positive character, less positive character. And of course, what they're saying is what's inside is important. But you know something, there seems to be a combination going on here. And what we're saying is that there has to be both an external beauty and an internal beauty. The story goes like this: Rabban Gamliel was deposed as chief rabbi. He was very tough on one of his colleagues. The other rabbis made a rebellion. It was all in Talmud Brachot. And you know what they did? They threw him out. They said, Rabban Gamliel, you're no longer the chief rabbi. So Rabban Gamliel, you can imagine, was very upset. He was really devastated. So what happened? He didn't know what to do. What do I do? And they eventually appointed Elazar ben Azariah, the very famous rabbi. He was the young upstart. He was only 18 years old, and yet he had already acquired so much wisdom. This is the young bottle with so much wisdom, what they're talking about over here. And Rabban Gamliel was sort of sidelined. And it's very interesting. The Talmud says that he went into a depression. He became depressed. And to get him out of the depression, God sent him a message. He got a dream. And in the dream, it says that he saw a beautiful vase on the outside, which he thought was not only beautiful on the outside, but was containing a beautiful plant on the inside, something precious. And to him, why was that comforting? Because he was accused of being too selective. What Rabban Gamliel had always done is interviewed the boys to come into the yeshiva, only looking at their character, but he never checked them in the whole sense of who they were. He was very selective. If their character was not right, then he wouldn't let them in. And you know what? There are a lot of guys who wanted to come in, who maybe at the beginning weren't so committed, but would have become more committed over the course of time. So Rabban Gamliel was criticized. So Hashem sent him a message. And the message was that if you see something in your dream like that, then you know what? Maybe you were right. Because what you saw maybe looked beautiful on the outside, but on the inside, who knows what's inside the vase? And Rabban Gamliel was being comforted that maybe his policy was not so bad. The rabbis comment on this story. They say, you know what? Rabban Gamliel was being comforted, but it really was, in fact, he made a mistake. He should have admitted more students, because even people are maybe superficial when they start studying Torah study. But you know what? You bring them in, eventually they become a mensch, and that is what was expected. So in the end, why do I tell you this story? Because Rabban Gamliel was learning a lesson. And the lesson was something that we need to understand today. That sometimes, you know, you see a beauty on the outside, and you get very excited and whatever, and the world today is so, for want of a better word, the Yiddish word, phenomenon. They're so phenomenal with external beauty, and of course when you read about the lives, as I mentioned a few days ago, the lives of these people, it's pathetic, not just pathetic, it's sad that with such beauty and with such means at their disposal, what they do to their lives, how they ruin their lives. So clearly that is an external beauty which doesn't have an internal content. But of course what we're saying is that beauty is, and listen to this comparison, beauty is hevel, is a zero. But he says, what happens when you put a one next to a zero? Then the zero becomes 10. And you put two zeros next to the one, it becomes 100. So what somebody said is like this. If you've got the one, meaning something going on the inside, there is an internal beauty. It's back to what we said a few days ago about tzniut and the whole idea of this very, very important characteristic, which is so central to Jewish life. Add the beauty. It's adding a zero, but you're adding a zero to a one. And you may be adding two zeros. And if you're really beautiful, adding three zeros and beyond. And you know what? That makes the number go up, because the beauty enhances the product. And I was thinking to myself, there is a concept which, again, a lot of you will know this phrase, hadras ponim. Hadras ponim is a wonderful expression. And we use it very often about rabbis. They have a hadras ponim. What does that mean? So we know, right? They have a good appearance. So I had the zuchus, and I mentioned it this morning in my thing I say after davening. or a few days ago, I mentioned it, that I once davened for the Manchester Rosh Yeshiva. Manchester Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Segal, was known as the Chofetz Chaim in England. He'd been a Talmud of Chofetz Chaim. He'd been to Radin. He learned before the war in Poland, and then he came back to England. He was born and bred in Manchester, England. Amazing individual. Some of his books, some of his writings have been put out by Art Scroll. He really was an unusual man. Every day for davening, took 2 hours to daven every morning. And I happened to be at the seaside in England, a place called Bournemouth. Bournemouth is, what is it like? I don't know, like Jones Beach, but it's probably nicer than Jones Beach. And you know what? There are a lot of hotels there, and he used to come there when he was a bit older to convalesce. And had he been in America, he would have probably been here, because I'm sure this was the perfect place for him. And he was a very special man. And when you see pictures of him, not only do you get the sense that this is obviously a special individual, but he had this tremendous glow. There was a glow about him. And it was, when I was standing next to him, you could see it. You could sense it, that there was a Simchas Chaim. He was really, and he didn't have it easy. He had a lot of sort of, certainly in latter life, he had a lot of health issues to deal with. But there was this glow. And you get these pictures, if you go to Eichel in Borough Park, he sells all the different pictures of great rabbis. And this Rabbi Segal, who was passed away maybe 10, 12 years ago, has this very, very special look. We call it Hadras Ponim. I think Ramesh Feinstein had it in a certain way, for those of you who knew him. I think, who else? I mean, one's seen different rabbis over the years who had a tremendous sense, not only of spirituality, but they really just emanated, something unique. And this is a very great bracha, and it's something that we're talking about here. That within the definition, we have the inner content, but the outer packaging, if you want to call it that, is also particularly important. Now, here comes the punch. Here comes the punchline, excuse me. Here comes the bottom line. You're at a wedding. What are you supposed to say to the kala, right? This is always my favorite bit of Talmud. Kala noeva chasuda. Yeah, the kala is not only Hasuda, she's chesed, bala chesed, she does kindness. No, she's beautiful. Now the problem is that, beauty is always a very subjective thing. But at the same time, some colors just, you'll know, you can dress up something, a bit, but you can't dress it up completely. She's not noah. What are you going to say? For all different reasons. And there is an argument in the Gemara about it. And Beis Shammai was very, had the reputation of being stricter than Hillel. Shammai's attitude was that you can only say Noah if she really is Noah. And if she's not, then you don't say it. Which, I don't know how many weddings he got invited to. My guess is not that many. He wasn't very diplomatic about this. I'll just read it to you. Famous Gemara, Ketza Merakdin Lifnei HaKala. We sing this. How do you dance in front of the Kala? What do you say when you're dancing? So Beis Shammai say, Kala Kamochi. You say, what she is, she is. In other words, you be honest. And on the surface, it's funny, but I would like to be at the wedding where Shabbai is there. If this is the house of Shabbai, this is what they're going to say. Beis Hillel say, no, what are you talking about? Kala noeva chasuda, like we do. And we sing it at a wedding, that the color is beautiful and chasuda. All right, so Omrelem Beis Shammai. So what happened was that Beis Shammai said to Beis Hillel, Omrim le Beis Hillel hareish oisech higeris osuma. They're very blunt. They said, what happens if unfortunately she has a physical fault? Omrim lo kala noeva chasuda? You should say that she is nice, she is pretty. And the Torah says, midvar sheker tichak, don't tell lies. So how can you tell something which seems to be an untruth? Let's not call it a lie, but certainly not the truth. Says Beis Hillel Shammai, with all due respect, you got it wrong. She says, Shammai, you're looking at it objectively. You know what? To the chosen standing there, and this should be true for every chosen, that she is the most beautiful woman in the room. That has to be the deal. And this is what Beis Hillel say. Beis Hillel say to him, says Shammai, Omrim ledivreiche mi shaloka mekach ra min ashuk. In other words, you bought something which wasn't so good, Shammai. What I tell you was a bad deal or a good deal? I try and comfort you and try and tell you that it was good. It was as good as I can make it. So you know what? In this case, the color has to be praised by everybody. You know why? Because in the eyes of that, particularly in the Chosin's eyes, it's all subjective. She is the noise. She is not only the chasuda, she is the noise. She is the most beautiful woman in the room. And there's no question about it that Shammai was looking at it objectively, and Hillel taught us a lesson here. That really we've got to look at it subjectively. And you know what happens? Long comes Shulchan Aruch, and it says, And we go with Beis Hillel, thank goodness. Mitzvah l'sameach chosam v'kala. This is in Code of Jewish Law, Eben Ezer, chapter 65, 6 Samach Chet, or Samach Chet, I think it's 65, he says, you've got to make the chosam kala happy, l'akei l'fanea, and dance before the kala, particularly v'loma, shehi noe v'chasuda, afilu eina noe. Even if she's not pretty, unbelievable. So they put it into the halacha, even if she's not. You've got to say she is. This always amuses me. It's unbelievable. You've got to be, what's the word, diplomatic. Sometimes tact is such an important thing. I always claim that one of the hardest things of going to live in some countries, particularly for instance in Israel, where everyone is very direct, I find that the diplomacy is not quite the way that they speak to you sometimes, to put it very bluntly. And you've got to sometimes, even in a situation like that, you've got to be diplomatic. You've got to say it in a way which is not hurtful. You've got to say it in a way which is encouraging. And of course, it's not really Devar Sheker. It's not really telling a lie, because as we said, she's certainly not to one person in the room, and hopefully to everybody. You know, when you go to weddings, no question, and you know, the men are pushed to one side when it comes to the tish, and the women sort of congregate around the color. But the reality is that every wedding, you know, there is a chain. There's really a chain in particularly sort of in Jewish weddings that we see. Color noise is not something that is stretching the truth. Really, every color has a certain chain. I really believe that, and I think this is so important. The item I just want to leave you to think about is, what about cosmetic surgery? If already we're talking about the beauty that God gave us. You know, everyone is created in a certain way. Now, all right, some of us look like sort of various relatives that are no longer alive, whatever. And we have this particular, how should we say, this particular look. But are we allowed, let's say, to enhance that particular look? All I can say is my rabbi on Shavuot, the last Shavuos, spoke about this for 4.5 hours. What he would say 4.5 hours, I don't know. It was all night and I really was not going to stay up. But the bottom line of this is very, very interesting. And there is a responsa which I came across. Somebody called Tzitz Eliezer Waldenberg, who only died maybe 2 or 3 years ago, was the rabbi of Shari Tzedek Hospital, very, very major personality in Israel. And he is not happy about cosmetic surgery. He's not talking about cosmetic surgery when it is absolutely necessary for the fact that a person suffered an injury or something like that. But he's talking about what they call in America, very, very subtly, the nose job. All right, you know, this famous example. So he says like this, he says, Yesh Ledata, I'll just read this to you, it's very interesting. It's one opinion, not everybody agrees with him. He says that there is Hashlachot Lechidushot Zel Tichuim Plastiim, good Hebrew word, plastic surgery. There's a whole discussion about this. Shemavatsim Ke'et Arofim, Eitzel Harbei B'nei Adam, people are doing the shame Yipui Eivarem, to improve their looks. The nose job, right, change your looks. And Kodoma. And of course, you know, every time that a famous star has this, it gets publicized straight away. So he says, but ain't shu machlo ke'ev, and there's no reason to do this because of a health reason or the person's not in pain. It is purely to enhance, if that's the way to describe it, their looks. Now, v'yesh mokam godol l'tana zot, shelo akagon do shu shenatata Torah reshut l'rapot. In other words, we know the Torah gives permission for the doctor to heal. Maybe in this case, no. This is pushing it. This is really pushing the envelope, because you're not healing. You're changing the person's looks. Now again, I think that he does say in his responsa that if the person is, how should we say, particularly depressed, suffers depression because of a certain fall, particularly as a result of an accident or whatever, that's a different story. Here we're talking about someone who is not satisfied with their looks and goes to the plastic surgeon. I know that there's about a million of them in Los Angeles and that part of the world, a few in New York, I guess, as well. And, you know, change my looks. The Ein Rashut Libnei Adam, he says, in this case, if you're doing it purely for the looks, there's no permission, he says. Latet l'rofim, l'chabol v'atzmam, l'shum matarazo. You're causing, the doctor is going to injure you. He's going to, get, you know, he's going to be very black and blue from this surgery. And he says, as far as he's concerned, no, not allowed. This is, again, purely for physical enhancement, not for any other reason. He says the doctors, he never allowed it. Now, whether they did plastic surgery for this purpose in Shari Tzedek while he was alive, my guess is probably not. And do they do this in other religious hospitals in Israel? I don't know. Very interesting to find out. But the reality is, he says, no, not acceptable. He says, you should know. Listen to this. This is why I brought this. Lahamin, you should believe. This is a muna, a statement of faith. Ki ein sayar kelokeinu, that who is the greatest artist in the world? The good Lord. Hashem created us the way He created us. V'hu yitbrach shemo tsar. He formed us. V'itbiya lekolecha ve'echa mi'itzura b'tsalma. We're in the image of God. B'tumuto in the form haholemet lo, which suits the person. So you think that you can improve on God's creation? The answer is no. V'alav ein lehosiv. You should not add. U'mimenu ein ligra, and not take away. Wow. So again, what can I say? If somebody would come to me with the Shaila, I'll send them to my Rav, who spoke about it for 4.5 hours, and I'm sure he must have come to a conclusion after that particular amount of time. But according to what we read over here, you know something, there comes a point, a bottom line. And the bottom line is that if you're doing cosmetic surgery because you want to enhance without any medical reasons, but just purely because of, let's call it, a certain amount of self, I'm going to use the word, pride, Giver, you know, Giver dick, whatever word you want to use, according to Rav Waldenberg, no, not allowed. So what did we see here? Again, just to review, we said beauty is clearly something that we don't detract from. We have all the references at the beginning from the Talmud talking about the beautiful places, the beautiful people, even the non-Jewish woman that was praised by Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who said that he saw this Roman woman and he was bowled over by her beauty. And you know, that's something, that's a very interesting statement in its own right. On the other hand, Shekel HaHein VeHevel HaYofi, we say every Friday night, beauty seems to be treated in a very a negative way. The answer is, and we had this tremendous suggestion, which is absolutely on the mark, that it is about the question of whether these things are permanent or whether they are fleeting. Beauty, in the end of the day, is something, physical beauty can be fleeting. And you know what, that we, and I think this what is such a wonderful Jewish approach, is that there is beauty, again, not just in looks. There's beauty in character. There's beauty in the way you conduct yourself. There's beauty in the way that you talk to people. We said this yesterday for business ethics. Manoah, the people will say, how beautiful is this person that he studied but the Torah, and he not only studied it, but he takes it to heart. He lives it. Right? Well, the greatest praise that you can get from somebody, let's say, who is not religious, or somebody who is not Jewish, and sees the way you conduct yourself, is to say that not only do you practice a religion, but you live the religion. And I always found that was a wonderful compliment, because when they see that, then you know you're doing the right thing. Because people can tell when somebody is being superficial, and when somebody is being sincere. I always argue when it comes to, for instance, Lubavitch, Chabad, when you meet them, these are, without doubt, beautiful people. They are some of the most sincere people in the world when it comes to religious life, religious practice. I cried when that story of the two shlichim, the husband and wife that were killed in Mumbai. You cried bitter tears because, you know, these were beautiful people. And they were murdered by evil people. And this is a terrible thing that happens in the world. And it was pure rishas, pure evil that did it. And, you know, you say to yourself that is really the point. That the kalanoiva chasuda, yes. We have this argument. You know, Shammai would be more direct. And Hillel is being more circumspect, is being much more diplomatic. But in the end of the day, it's adding that zero, which is Hevel. But you know what? You add it to a one, and it really increases the number enormously. Hadras Ponim, everything else about it. And I have to say, you know, I'm going to be very complimentary that this is a very beautiful group of people. You know, the people here, and I really feel this, that what I was saying today about the people here is that there is a chain. There is a tremendous chain in the group. I had it in the last group. I was here 2 weeks ago also, and in this group, and I really just wish that everybody, you know, continues. I pray that everybody continues in good health, and, you know, that your beauty continues to shine. I'm giving you a bit of a shevach here, but I really feel it's worth it. Any comments? Any?
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I just want to ask you.
Yeah. That I don't know. You're gonna have to. You're gonna have to find out. It's not me.
What time did you start today?
3:30. 3:30. Yeah. No, according to my watch, it was 3:30 on the dot. What I also want to say to you, which some of you have been studying computers in, I'm going to mention it again. There is a course that I taught in my community, which, as I mentioned yesterday, is a group of people sitting in Monsey, New York, studying it, and it's an opportunity. This year will also be on the computer. When I get home, I'll load it onto the computer, so you'll be able to, if you want to hear it again. There are a number of shiurim there that I've given here over the years and that I give in yeshiva, and if you want to sort of connect to this, it's very simple, YU Torah. YU Torah, one word. you just type that in, YU Torah, into the computer, it will come up. Just scroll my name, and you've got, you can listen, you can, YU Torah, you can listen to that till, as they say, till the cows come home. It's one of those exciting things that, and there are many other great shiurim there, you know, don't just sort of get stuck on what I do. There's wonderful shiurim there from all different speakers, from Eretz Yisrael, from here. It's very special, so I just wanted to make that little plug, and also to say to everybody, should all be well, and really we should all see each other again, please God, next year, all in good health. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.